Welcome to Ancient Future Faith with Dr. Chris Alford, pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community in Sacramento. Just what is ancient future Christian faith? Join Chris each week as he talks with special guests about a refreshing renewal in evangelical worship and spirituality that's helping many believers get in touch with their ancient Christian heritage. Now, with another look at how the road to the evangelical future runs through the ancient past, here's Dr. Chris Alford.
Hey everybody, I'm wondering how you're doing today as you're listening to this program, whether on the radio or maybe on our podcast page at epiclesis.org. My name's Chris Alford and I'm the host of the program, the pastor of the church Epiclesis, an evangelical ancient future faith church in Sacramento, California. If you're wondering what in the world that might mean, just zip over to epiclesis.org and learn more about the church. We come to you each week on this program to talk about ancient future things, how our evangelical future runs through our ancient Christian past, and I believe that it does. And I love to bring you a wide variety of guests. Often, the people who have influenced me and mentored me and been a blessing to me in my life. And back again, I think for maybe the second or third time, a dear friend of mine, Dr. Carla Waterman. Carla, blessings, and thank you so much for joining us.
Good to be here, Chris.
Well, Carla, I have to say once again that you were one of my very favorite and influential professors at the Institute for Worship Studies. Your specialty there, although you wore a lot of wonderful different hats, was to talk about spirituality. Tell us just a teeny bit about you and what you have done, what you are doing these days, and then I just would love to pick your brains about this, well, really weird, chaotic, upside-down time that we're living in right now. Yes. But tell us just a little bit about you, would you please?
Well, I have been a spirituality professor for, I actively was teaching for about 28, 25 years in Christian spirituality, and primarily Christian spirituality that is connected to the life of the church. So not only personal spiritual disciplines, but what does it mean to be a people who are baptized into Christ and who live out the life of the church in this kind of more sacramental way. I'm also a professional musician, and so I've kind of danced between music and teaching, and then I have a lovely soul friend space in my life where I walk alongside a number of women whose lives are intense, and I walk with them in their intensity and seek to find Jesus in the midst of all that.
You know, I just thought of one other thing that is special to me, and that is that you are a member of the Northumbria community in the northeast of England. And I don't know that I've mentioned this to you before, but we use their Celtic Book of Daily Prayer for our weekly Eucharistic gatherings on Thursday mornings at our chapter house. And what a rich resource that is. We ought to put a plug out there. Folks, you ought to get the Celtic Book of Daily Prayer, book one and two.
Yeah, yeah. Celtic Daily Prayer is an extraordinary, it's a two-volume set now. Yeah. And so there are 4 years worth of devotional thoughts in there coming from all kinds of places. This is a communal book. So it comes from the community and from members of the community, and it is delightful.
Carla, in these really unusual times, I was tempted to say unprecedented, but they're not. In our Christian history, there have been times strikingly similar to this. In fact, that's one thing that if I'm tempted to despair, I despair over, because so many Christians are unhooked from our past and our history and our tradition, because if they were more hooked to their Christian heritage, perhaps there wouldn't be so much anguish and gnashing of teeth among Christians during these times. But nevertheless, as I was thinking of somebody I could pick their brains a little bit about spirituality in a time like this, yours was at the top of the list. And I just wonder, well, I'm sure it's easy to see challenges, but I'm also interested in hearing from you today about opportunities in a time like this. So let's start with the challenges first.
I think it's the obvious beginning is it's happening to all of us all at the same time. And so you have this external reality that presses in to our lives, but how it is experienced is unique to every person. It has to do with the place in life that you are, whether you are vulnerable or perceive yourself as vulnerable, whether the relationships you are living with are ones that work well when you are pressed into a small space for a long period of time, whether you have children and what ages they are, whether you are in a career path that has kept you intensely busy, and all of a sudden you come to a screeching halt or have to reconfigure how you're working, or you find yourself thinking that your life was stable and suddenly you have no job. So when I start to just list it, you go, okay, so we all have COVID-19, we all have whatever restrictions and challenges that press in on us, but how we experience it is really unique to who we are.
Yeah.
And that is going to impact how we encounter God. I was thinking yesterday, you have everything from disappointment to disaster being experienced during this time. Here's what I think the opportunity is, though. I think we've never been in a better place for the church to learn how to lament, which is one of the really important aspects of Christian worship that is so hard to grab a hold of collectively. But we are at a time where everybody's impacted in some way.
Yeah.
You have people who have lost loved ones and can't mourn them.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, often with lament, you have the issue of someone saying, well, I don't really feel like there's anything to lament. I'm doing fine. But this is a season where a lot more people, a lot more Christians can go, this isn't working.
Yeah.
And my conception of God and how God works isn't working.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And those are the invitations to go, okay, maybe what we need is a new way to think about prayer and to think about what prayer is when you can't find God.
Mm.
Or it doesn't look good. It doesn't look like what he's giving is good things.
Right.
And so there's so much riches. I mean, all you have to do is open the Psalms to find psalm after psalm after psalm that is prayers of crying out to God when things are not working. And I think we're in that kind of time, mm-hmm, where we could do more of learning how to lament. And then leaders have to learn how to lament. We have to learn how to be honest with our, mm-hmm, questions before, mm-hmm, God. And I think often what happens for us is we don't want to have those questions.
Right.
So we push them aside, but what happens is we get dull.
Yeah.
Because we're not talking to God because we don't know what to make of God right now.
Yeah. We don't talk to God because we don't know what to make of God. Hold on to that just a second as I remind people that they're listening to Ancient Future Faith. It's a radio program and podcast brought to you by Epiclesis, an Ancient Future Faith church. I'm Chris Alford, the host. Today on the phone with me is a dear friend and mentor, Dr. Carla Waterman, whose expertise, among other things, is spirituality. Carla, it occurred to me as you were speaking that in some ways this whole thing is like a Rorschach test, in that depending upon, well, how we're wired and what our spirituality is and a variety of other things, we may see completely different things in the same picture.
Oh, I think that's very true. I think that's very true. Yeah.
You said just before the break that we are tempted not to talk to God because we don't know what to make of God. And you were also talking about lament. Take just a, mm-hmm, second, would you, to define what biblical, authentic lament looks like and why we don't know how to do that right now? Because I agree with you completely. We don't have a clue. And then let's talk about how that might be a way forward, would you?
Yeah, sure. Well, lament is what happens when we have lost our grip on the steadfast love of God. Does not change. If you look at the Psalms and you look at the Psalms of lament, you will see over and over again that the reason that we cry out to God, we may challenge God, we may be angry and tell God why we are angry. There's all kinds of intense emotion that can go with lament. But the bottom line is, I have lost my grip on your steadfast love. For the sake of your steadfast love, hear me, hear us. So it's the reclaiming of real relationship with God that steps back into that place of his steadfast love. And the only way we can do that is to engage honestly where we are in what we know as the I-thou relationship, where we are communicating with God, not trying to think about God.
Oh, that's so good. It's worth saying again. Would you underscore that for us? There is a difference.
Yeah, it's the I thou space of communicating with God. I, you, and being able to speak directly to God. And often in the place when we are confused and deeply, profoundly disappointed or in despair, what we do is we try to think hard about what we think about God and try to make it work rather than simply dropping our guard and being where we are with God instead of about God.
I don't think that most Christians know how to lament. And I imagine that you don't either. And I'm wondering why that is. How did we get to this point?
Here's one thing. We're so afraid of getting it wrong.
What do you mean?
Well, okay, so not ever being angry with God. You know, I think for many of us, we've been taught that that is just not kosher. It's not okay to be angry.
Right.
And to be angry at the situations in life. And so if you're not supposed to be there, but that's honestly what you're feeling, you're stuck.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. And I think there's a lot of fear of intense emotion in the church.
Yeah.
That it will get out of control. When in fact, what lament always does when it's genuine lament is it brings you to a place of silence.
Yeah.
It's what happens to Job. It's what happens to David. It happens where we come to the end of all of our work. Then there we are, naked before God. And that's where we need to get to. And in that space, then we can encounter God in a way that has opened up our categories and allowed us to connect with God, to be with God face to face. So, you know, intense emotion, it isn't there just to always be an intense. It is there so that that intensity of confusion and frustration and despair can be poured out so that peace and quiet can reign. So we can mark it as an opportunity to learn to lament, but the opportunity spiritually, I think, is there right now.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Lament means just screaming out to God. And is that it?
Crying out to God. But it's crying out to God for the purpose of connecting with God.
Not just railing against him and then walking away.
No. It's the kind of intense argument you have with your closest friend when you know you will get to the other side, but you have to go through it.
Yeah. You have said all along in this conversation that lament is a way forward for us right now. What are the ingredients to lament and how does it help us move forward?
Well, corporate lament is going to provide structure and space for people's pain. So you can take a psalm. One of the corporate psalms of lament I find most intriguing is Psalm 44. It's a psalm of the sons of Korah, and it's a psalm where it starts out with, "You have been faithful to Israel, and you have done all these incredible things for us." And then there's this moment in the psalm, and it says, "But you're not doing it now."
Yeah. Wow.
And we are like sheep led to the slaughter. I mean, that's where that phrase comes from, is Psalm 44. And what the leader does, the ministers do, is tell the story. They tell the story of where they have encountered God. And then they stop and they say, "But we're not with you now. Or you're not with us. Where are you? Why are you hiding your face from us?" And so that structure of telling the story of how you have been faithful and then pausing and say, "But we are here." And then this is where the creativity of worship planning and worship of just needing to know, how do you do that in your context? Do you write things down, have music and allow people to pray silently? Do you get into large groups and take your pain and yell it across the room? I don't know. But that space of structure and permission, but also the encouragement to talk to God, to not only just get stuck in your pain, but to tell God about it. And all of that then is at some point or other bathed in your steadfast love endures forever. We don't understand you, but we trust that your purposes are larger than ours. But you can only do that if you have been able to name what it is that's really going on.
Yeah, name what is going on. Yep, yep, yep.
Right. And then in the naming and the letting it be okay to name it and providing a safe space to do that. You know, there's only one psalm in 150 that does not end with some form of your steadfast love endures forever. So I think that's a really good pointer to be able to say, this is where we're heading, is an affirmation of God's steadfast love, his hesed, in the midst of our questions. So you don't resolve things, but you lay them in the largest welcoming space there is.
I don't know about you, but I'm willing to say that churches that cannot or will not do this will not only seem to be incredibly disconnected from reality, but are in danger of losing their prophetic voice in the culture, and may already have, and will probably have a very difficult time, spiritually speaking, moving forward. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do agree. I'm working on an article that says about this, that lament is the antidote to despair.
Wow. Wow. Say that one more time. That's really good.
Lament is the antidote to despair.
And why is that?
Because what we do in despair, I mean, if you think about despair and depression and how these things manifest, it's that place where we are unresolved in the things that pain us the most, and we push them away.
Yes.
And we try to live with them, on top of them, as though they don't exist. And the impact is a dullness and despair that is the opposite of hope. So if you want to be a people who are prophetic, which are people who can live in hope and press into a genuine hope, you have to be able to deal and respond to the despair.
In a biblically thorough, meaningful way.
Right. And we have a biblically thorough way. It's just that it's uncomfortable. It's scary. It's scary to be the pastor or the worship leader leading this. It's a place where you step into a very biblical space, but an untried one for people. And we don't like leading or being in a space that we haven't been in before.
As a matter of fact, I've got music minister colleagues who say to me, my pastor has said that, in fact, it happened to me. The pastor comes to me and says, I don't want any music in a minor key. It needs to all be upbeat. We need to celebrate, celebrate, celebrate. And this is why I think, frankly, because the way we worship does shape what we believe, it's formational, that we don't have a language for this. And yet we have forgotten that the world and its circumstances are also formational.
Exactly.
But Carla, in our remaining moments, I'm just wondering about you, and how are you moving forward in a time like this? What does your own spirituality look like? And are there some things about your own walk and story right now that might, I don't know, be an encouragement to us here?
Well, this is going to sound funny, but one of the things I have loved about the COVID crisis is that everybody put their services online.
Yeah.
And what it has given me, as somebody who works in a church, but not necessarily with my tribe, it's given me a place to worship with my husband. It's given me a place to just be refreshed by some really great sermons and wonderful music. You know, I've gone back in my past to places that I've been and checked in with them to see how they're doing.
Yeah.
It has been a really lovely time of reconnecting with the larger church.
By the way, don't you think one of the downsides of being a minister, pastor, church worker is that we don't get to keep up with what our colleagues are doing in other places?
I think one last thing that has been really interesting to deal with for me, and maybe this will resonate, is that COVID is forcing a space of living in the moment and living with God in the moment. It's not a very good goal setting time. You know, it's like, I don't know what the future holds, and I don't know how long it's going to take. And that space of going, but I can be present to my world and seek God, seek to connect with his people as I can in the moment. And that is not a bad discipline, especially for very confident Americans, like, you know, of which I am one.
Yeah.
We are pretty sure it will go well for us, not in a godly sense, but in a human sense.
Right.
And right now, it's a little more iffy. And so that space of being able to live in the moment to not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. That too is a profound spiritual space that COVID both challenges us with and opens the opportunity for.
What's life in the moment like for you right now, especially where you're living?
Oh, life in the moment for me. I'm living in Minneapolis and not far from where George Floyd was killed and the protests have begun. Mm. So life in the moment for me in part is paying attention to the racial tensions in my community.
Yeah.
And seeking to understand not the organizational pieces of things, but the people and the pain, and recognize that part of my spiritual and human life is to be present to other people and listen to their stories and learn to get out of the way of their story and not put my story on top of theirs.
It occurs to me that Job's friends only got into trouble when they started talking.
Yeah, that's right. They did.
And we're not really wired just to sit down and grieve with somebody, or particularly to listen, yes?
Mm-hmm. I think there's a humility that comes with having done it wrong so many times and realizing that perhaps there might be another way. And so I have tried to fix a whole lot of people in my day, but learning to go, that didn't really work very well. It gives me a new opportunity to be less of a fixer and more of a listener.
One of the most moving times in my own spiritual life happened, in fact, when you were giving me a big hug. I've told you this story before, but I'd love to tell it again now to say, I was a student at the Institute for Worship Studies. My life, ministerial life, was falling apart. And it was in a service of Eucharist and healing prayer afterwards that I came to you and I just cried. And you clasped your arms around me and said something very simple. And then we cried together. And if that's not a beautiful picture of someone coming along beside another and lamenting, I don't know what is. I'll never forget it. Carla, if somebody had some questions about where to find some materials or resources on how to lament or something about the biblical way of lamenting, where would they turn?
You know, I am reading a wonderful book that I didn't realize was around. Michael Card wrote a lovely book on lament called A Sacred Sorrow, Reaching Out to God in the Lost Language of Lament, written in 2005, so it's not new, but it's got wonderful biblical principles, and then he tells the stories, he retells the stories of biblical characters that he looks at their lives through the lens of lament.
My guest today has been Dr. Carla Waterman. I'm proud to say she's a friend and mentor and colleague who's wonderful to talk to, especially when it comes time to thinking about lament. Carla, bless you. Thank you for taking the time to be with us today on the program.
You're so welcome, Chris. It's been great to be here.
Folks, I want you to think about this as we go forward and before we gather for another episode of Ancient Future Faith. The road to our evangelical future surely does run through our ancient Christian past. We have a lot to learn and listen to from our heritage. Until then, the Lord be with you.
Thank you for joining us for another look at Ancient Future Faith. There is a refreshing wind of renewal blowing through the evangelical church as more and more worshipers turn for inspiration to the rich language and pattern of the ancient church. And they're rediscovering classic Christianity and learning to draw strength from a deep well of time-tested truth and tradition. Want to experience Ancient Future Faith for yourself? Join us for worship at Epiclesis in Sacramento on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. in the chapel at 4600 Winding Way. You can contact us by calling 916-572-9113 or online at epiclesis.org. That's 916-572-9113 or on the web at epiclesis.org.
Hi there, friends. This is Pastor Chris. One more word, please, before you go. Wanted to let you know that during this difficult time of the COVID-19 virus, we are not gathering at Epiclesis in body, but we are virtually in body because we share the same head, Jesus Christ. So if you're interested in hearing more about our virtual worship services or special small groups or prayer services, please check out epiclesis.org. That's epiclesis.org. Stay safe, and the Lord be with you.